All right. Good morning, everybody. Hey, we're so glad that you guys are here with us this morning. So we're starting a new series. In case you're wondering, like, what the heck is going on? We are starting a new series called Celebrate. So I think what better way to celebrate than with a bunch of balloons, right? So that's kind of the whole idea. That's we're doing some thematic stuff. But before we get into that, I want to kind of talk in detail just a little bit more about what Daniel was talking about and Hurricane Harvey. First, let me correct him. I didn't get to go yesterday. I had some friends that went, which seeing the videos afterwards, I was like, I'm jealous because they're getting to drive through like rivers and stuff. And I'm like, I'm a redneck at heart. And so my heart rate just kind of bumped when I saw the picture. So I've got a friend. His name is Luis Castanon. I call him Luis, but it works. And so we were talking this week about, you know, what we wanted to do, and we wanted to do something, and we felt like, you know, it was our responsibility to respond, especially as Christians, which is sad. You see a lot of non-Christians doing more than even Christians, and if that's the case, I don't know where your Christianity is really at, because you're kind of missing the point. But that's other people in other churches. That's not us, right? So why don't you just kind of give them some of the details of exactly what took place yesterday?
All right. Well, unlike Chris, I'm not a redneck. I'm a city boy. I get manicures and pedicures, so no. And I felt a calling to go down there, not with my home church and just me and whoever wanted to join could tag along. And it was kind of a last minute deal. And then, you know, I started wrestling with it, and I was like, well, I have to work. I have to mow my grass. My wife's car needs to go in the shop. I got to take it to Shreveport. There were so many other things that I could have done to put myself and my needs first. But obviously, God had other plans. And even then, whenever God made it clear that I was going to go down there, I told him, okay, I'll go down there, but I'm not getting in that water.
Now, hey, this is the funny thing. Lewis can't swim. And that's not a joke.
I don't know how to swim. And then even when I said, okay, God, I'll get in the water, but just to my knees, okay? So even then, I was obeying him, but I wasn't obeying him the way he wanted me to obey him. And obviously you can tell your pastor, he's where he works out. And I saw him at the gym, and I came up to him, and I say hi to him every. I have a lot of respect for this man. And up until that day when we kind of started talking about Houston, and he told me what he had in mind, and Andy Mack was there, and Andy Mack had a plane that was going down there as well. So Chris had two options, you know, either go through Andy Mack or go through me. And then for him to choose me to represent y'all's church, even though I'm not a member of this church, my wife and I, my kids, we visited here a few times, and respect I have for him and his wife.
I guess we didn't make the cut, right?
No, y'all did.
I'm just kidding. It's a joke. It's a joke.
And so when he sent me a text message and he was like, hey, I got some stuff. When are you leaving? I told him we were leaving, and he drove out of his way to meet us and help us load the stuff on the trailer. Just my level of respect went from, I already held him at a high standard, and then now I'm not going to tell him because his head's not going to fit through that door, but he's...
All right, so let's talk about the logistics. That's enough of that. So you guys, y'all made it to an apartment complex that couldn't, they had no access to some of the supplies that were being delivered, correct?
Yeah, and we had a route planned where we were going to go. We were just going to go to Houston, and we had areas that we were going to drop off supplies to. And we went, and then even while we were there, we just saw the need, and then I started getting text messages and emails, and one that kind of got my attention was that there was a apartment complex that was still flooded, and obviously they couldn't get to the shelters where they were giving out food and water and supplies. And we were about an hour away. And when I think of Houston, I don't know what I was thinking, but Houston's pretty big. We left where we were, and then we drove across town to the south side, and you know, we get there with our trailer, and there's already a line of people there. And I probably cried five times before I even got there. And then when I got there, I just broke down and cried again. And then I see these, you know, man, these husbands, these, you know, head of households, and they're asking me for food and diapers. And like, I went there, you know, to help others, and what came, I think I just, God broke me, and he changed me, he touched me emotionally, and it would be selfish for me not to share the impact that y'all had on those people. And at that time, they don't care about your political background, they don't care about who you voted for, they don't care about your skin color. We all came together under one, because it doesn't matter who's in office, God's on the throne at all times. And he's going to be there 4 years, 8 years, the next, if we ever get another hurricane or tornado or whatever it is that's going to bring us together as a community, God's still going to be on the throne.
That's right.
And I wanted to come here and personally thank y'all for pouring into that ministry of helping others. And I can tell you that I've personally saw the impact that y'all have on other people hours away from here.
That's awesome. But hey, also, we wouldn't have an opportunity to be a part of that had you not stepped up and did what you did. So let's give it up for Lewis. All right. So that's kind of, I screwed up the transition on that one. You know, it is a celebration though, right? I mean, the fact that we have an opportunity to be a part of something like that, and it's a small part, right? I mean, you know, there are people who are raising literally millions of dollars, but for us to respond proportionately, I think is a cause for celebration. So today we're starting a series, like I said, called Celebrate. And the whole premise of the series is, I've got a couple of, it's got some dual meanings and dual purposes. The first one is that I want to kind of debunk some of the myths about God. I want, maybe you grew up with this idea of God being one way, and I want to kind of hopefully maybe change some of your perceptions that you have about God, at least to consider it, right? Because I think a lot of us, our view of God is formed very early on, and so when somebody challenges that, you tend to push back. So we're going to challenge some of maybe your assumptions of God. And then secondly, we're going to take this entire month to gear up for our birthday party. September. So we're wild. September 24th, what we do is every year at the end of September, the last Sunday in September, we celebrate our birthday party as a church. This will be our sixth birthday party, which everyone is significant, right? For me, I'm like, we made it another year. That is awesome. I haven't died yet. Nobody's killed me. Nobody's like stoned me from the stage. Like, this is good. Another year. We're doing well. But we really do. We celebrate God's faithfulness every year, you know, kind of like clockwork. And so we're going to build this month up to that. It's going to be a monumental celebration. So what we're going to look at today is we're going to look at one of the character aspects or the aspects of God's character that tends to get overlooked. Have you noticed, and I have this idea, I have this problem probably just like you do, I tend to focus on certain aspects of God's character more than I focus on other aspects of God's character, kind of based on what I want God to be. I know you would never do that, but I do that sometimes. And so I think there are certain aspects of God's character that we overlook or we forget about. Or maybe you just don't know because you grew up in a very, you know, strict and religious, that's my what I call religious, religious, just because it's ridiculous, right? But maybe you grew up in a very strict and kind of domineering home in that regard. Or maybe you grew up in a church that only talked about God's wrath and God's judgment. And maybe you don't know anything about the celebratory nature of God. You don't know anything about this God that we serve who actually is joyful, right? And I think it's important to bring out both sides of that. Maybe you grew up with this view of God that he's this angry, distant, cosmic rule enforcer who's ready to smite you the second you screw up. Has anybody else had these weird, you know, interpretations of who God is? It's like, you know, and I think a lot of times it's because we draw visually from the Greek gods. And I think, like, I see Zeus, and God obviously is, you know, right, that's a myth. God is real. But I see, you know, like the lightning bolt. And man, the second I do something stupid, If that were the case, I would get electrocuted about 100 times a day. So clearly, that's not who God is, right? That's not the totality of his character. Maybe you went to a church that just heavily emphasized God's judgment and God's wrath. Or maybe your parents wanted you to follow the rules. And so they used God to coerce you to be a good little boy or a bad little, or a good little boy or good little girl, right? Maybe God was the bad cop in that scenario. I don't want to diminish all of the other characteristics that God has, but I do want to focus on some things that I think we don't take enough time to focus on, right? I think that God does get upset from time to time. So do you, yeah. Right? It's like, for some reason, for some people, it's so hard for them to fathom that God could be loving and get upset. You're a parent. You're loving and you get upset. Or at least I do. I don't know about you, but man, I love my kids, but good Lord. Like, I don't know that anybody upsets me more often than my children. And God, I don't know that God's much different. Like, he loves us, but he probably gets upset at some of the stupid things that we do from time to time. So God does get upset, and there are things that make him angry. That's part of his character, not all of his character. I think that he loves justice. He hates when people suffer or go through things unfairly, right? He hates that, because what happens with injustice, it's usually the poor and the defenseless that are the ones, they're the victims of injustice, right? And so God hates that. He absolutely dislikes justice. That's part of, but not all of, his character. He gives us rules to follow, mostly to protect us from us. Right? If you go back and you look at some of the instructions that we get from God, some of the rules that we get from God, it's usually you can look at them kind of with the broader scope, and you realize he's really just protecting us from us. And it's not like he's being a jerk about it. He's like, don't do this, you know, because it's really fun and it's only beneficial to your life. I can't think of anything in Scripture that we're forbidden to do and it's only beneficial to our life. Now, there are things that may be pleasurable, but the end of those things is typically destruction. And so he's preventing us from destroying or self-imploding ourselves, right? So that's kind of part of his character, but that's not all of his character. That's not the only thing that he feels toward us. I heard a quote one time that really sums this up, and it says this: God is not a killjoy. He just opposes anything that kills joy. Right? God is not a killjoy. He's not this cosmic rule enforcer, you know, the cosmic police that only wants to enforce rules and to be a jerk and take all the fun out of. And for whatever reason, this is the way that we approach God sometimes. We think that God is going to take all of the fun out of my life by giving me these set of rules to follow. God does not oppose joy. He just opposes the things that kill joy. And so if you want some real joy, not that fake stuff that, you know, that we always pursue through the endeavors that we pursue in our lives, like entertainment and relationships, and we try to substitute, we try to put a Band-Aid on a gaping wound, right? And we know those things don't satisfy. The only thing that satisfies is being in a relationship with Jesus and knowing him and the contentment and joy that comes from that, right? Because look, you can live, when you're young, you probably just don't know any better. You're ignorant. That's not a slight. We all got to figure things out, right? But as you get a little bit older and you start to accomplish some stuff and you accomplish something maybe even that you thought was going to validate you or add value to your life, and you accomplish it and you feel good for about 2 weeks. And then you're like, wow, that doesn't bring about the satisfaction that I thought it would bring about, because nothing does. None of it does. There's one thing. There's only one thing that really, truly satisfies. And so God is not a killjoy. He just opposes what kills joy, right? So what we're going to look at today is what I'm going to call the other side of God's nature, specifically how he's a God who doesn't shy away from a party. How many of you have you ever envisioned God with his party hat on and his little, whatever? That's not the right noise. I'm not going to do it again. Right? It's like a fake kazoo. Right? That sounded like somebody was passing gas. But God is not a God who shies away from a good party. In fact, God will throw a good party. Like, and there's this music video and it's called Party People. And I just started thinking about that. God is a God of celebration. Like, God celebrates us. And I think maybe depending on how you've been taught or what you grew up believing about God, that's hard for you to fathom. He gets excited for us. He gets excited about us. Like, do you have these feelings about certain people when even the mention of their name, you just kind of like, man, I really like that person. That's how God feels about you. At the mention of your name, at the thought of you, I really love him. Have you guys, this is sacrilegious in some circles, but we're not like that. Have you guys ever seen The Shack? Anybody seen The Shack? Yeah. All right, if you have not, and you want to, I'm apparently going to be disqualified from being a preacher if I condone this, but I'm going to do it anyway, right? Because I think it's, if you're smart enough to see through the what is it called when you assign characteristics to some... analogies, I don't know, something like that. Look, we all know God is not a woman, right? Like, God is a spirit, and God is, he has male features or male qualities. So just get past all of that and look at the story. But in the story, so they're talking to Papa, who is a woman, which is interesting, right? But it's God. And so every time somebody makes mention of somebody, God is like, I'm especially fond of him, or I'm especially fond of her. And I think sometimes we just don't think that God feels like that about us. I think for me, sometimes I'll just be personal and share my struggle with you. Sometimes when I think what God thinks about me, this would be my response if I were God thinking about me. Right? But he's especially fond of us. He gets excited about us. He celebrates us. I can't help but think about some of these verses that remind me of this. Hebrews chapter 11 talks about how God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Now, when you reward somebody, what you do is you throw a party for them. When somebody accomplishes something significant, you have a celebration to commemorate the accomplishment, right? God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. 1 John talks about how he lavishes and pours out his love on us. Now, when I think about the expression lavishes and pouring out, I just think about confetti and streamers, man. Like, right, just coming down. He lavishes and pours his love out on us. But what we're going to spend the bulk of our time on today is looking at one story in particular. It's one that puts God's celebratory nature on display for all to see and to commemorate the beginning of football season. Right. Yesterday, how many of you guys accomplished very little with your lives yesterday because football season started? All right, I got a few of you, a few kindred spirits. Some of us didn't get to enjoy it as much as we wanted to, but it's okay. So to commemorate the beginning of football season, we're going to call this message excessive celebration. So you guys know what an excessive celebration is? It's you get it. Let's say a team scores a touchdown and they get into the end zone and they start doing, you know, all kinds of, and there are apparently certain things that constitute as an excessive celebration and other things don't. We're not trying to get into the pedantics of it, but the point is, at a certain, you cross the line at some point from just a celebration to an excessive celebration. And I think God excessively celebrates us. And so the passage that we'll be looking at today is one that you may be familiar with. It's a regular in the lineup. We talk about it pretty often. And it's commonly referred to as the story of the prodigal son. And it was really cool because I was reading about it this week and also heard that some people refer to it as the story of the loving father or the story of the lovesick father. And it just kind of adds another dynamic to it, I think, because we always view it from the son's perspective, but what if you view it from the father's perspective, right? And I think that's important to do sometimes. So the story of the prodigal son is found in Luke chapter 15, verses 11 through 24. Now, there's quite a few verses here, so bear with me. And this is Jesus talking. He's telling some stories. In fact, this is the third story that he's told in a row. He told a story about lost sheep. He told a story about a lost coin. And now he's telling a story about a lost son. And he said, Jesus said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, and it's always got to be the young one, doesn't it, right? It's always got to be the baby that's entitled and acting a fool. Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them, and not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. So just to kind of give you, to set up the story, to kind of give you an understanding of what's going on, the younger son approaches his father, asks for his share of the inheritance, basically the division of the will, right? And the father had no responsibility to give him what he wanted at that time, but he did anyway. And so he gives him half or whatever the percentage that he got was, and the son goes off on a journey to a distant country and squanders his estate with loose living. We could talk about all that, but we won't talk about that right now. Verse 14, it says, now when he had spent everything. He blew all of his money. He broke. A severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. Now, let me kind of give you, is this going to work? It's not the flag I was hoping for, but how am I going to throw that? That's going to kill somebody. All right. So there may be a flag later. So he went and spent everything. A severe famine occurred. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country. And so now he's gone from being this very wealthy man's son in line to get, you know, his share of the estate. And he goes and spends all of that. A famine takes place. Now he's hired himself out. He's a laborer for somebody who owns swine, which are pigs, right? And in the Jewish culture, this is detestable. You're not supposed to do all of that. And so it says that he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. So now he's broke and he's hungry. And when you're hungry, you get hangry. Does anybody else get hangry? Man, I try not to. I really do. But man, it's just like I don't like people when I'm hungry. Does anybody with me on that? All right, good. Stop doing that. That's rude. But verse 17, it says, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I'm dying here with hunger? So he starts to have an epiphany. He comes to his senses. He said, I will get up and I will go to my father and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. So he kind of concocts this idea, this plan, that he's going to go back to his father. And he doesn't even want his position back as the father's son. He just wants to be a hired servant because the father takes care of those who are under his care, right? And in his stead, his responsibility, he takes care of those who are underneath him, right? Do you guys get where we're going with that? So he got up, verse 20, he got up and came to his father. Now remember, he was on a distant journey. He was a long ways away. So he came to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him and ran towards him, and he embraced him and he kissed him. Can you imagine the celebration? Can you imagine the reunion? And so the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven, and in your sight, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, and just interesting, we'll talk about this more in a minute. Do you notice how the father didn't even respond to what the son said? The son doesn't, hey, Father, I messed up. I made all these mistakes. Look at all the stupid things that I've done. And the father says nothing in response to the son about the things that the son has done. He just turns the attention and he tells his servants to go prepare a feast. We about to throw a party up in here. But the father said to his slaves, quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring, this is my favorite part of this verse, and bring the fattened calf, kill it, steak, filet mignon. We about to throw down some red meat, people. The fattened calf, kill it, and let us eat, and I need you to fill in the gap for me. Eat and thank you. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. And they began to celebrate. Now, I don't know about you, but it's hard for me to imagine that God feels about me like that sometimes. Right? It's hard for me to imagine that God is so quick to forget the things that I've done, because I'm not so quick to forget the things that I've done. And God knows nobody else is quick to forget the things that I've done. Y'all want to talk about that for a minute? Right? Everybody's like, yeah, you know, God's forgiving. But then you start talking about the reality of it, right? It's such an incredible story. But it's not just a fairy tale. It's a reality. It's how God really does feel about you and about me. It's actually how he feels for us and toward us. And so here are just a few of my thoughts on this passage with regard to our theme. The first one is this. God doesn't just tolerate you. God celebrates you. And I don't know where you're at or kind of what your understanding of God is or what your view of God is, but I struggle with this sometimes because I don't know how you view other people, but I'm very performance oriented, right? It's kind of, we live in a world with what have you done for me lately? And it's selfish and we know it's wrong, but it's still the tendency I think a lot of us have. And so I kind of internalize that. It's like, well, what have I done for God lately? What have I screwed up lately? Let me keep a ledger of all the things that I've done well and all the things that I've done bad, and let's see where I stand with God based on that. And it just doesn't work like that. You'll never measure up. You'll never do enough good to be justified in God's sight. It's Jesus that makes you good enough, right? So God doesn't just tolerate you. He celebrates you. And I love the way in that passage, the Father, he's not asking, he's not grilling, he's not questioning the Son on what the heck he was doing and why did you make all these mistakes and tell me what was going through your head when you did X, Y, and Z. Because this is what we do as parents, right? I don't know about you, but my son, I'm like, what were you thinking? And then, I know the answer. You weren't. Because that's what boys do, right? Girls, Shelly told me one time, Shelly's a lot smarter when it comes to parenting than I am. So she usually corrects me as we go along. And so she told me that little girls, apparently she read books and Dr. Dobson told her this is true. But girls actually think about what they do before they do it. So if a girl does something wrong, then it's calculated. Like she meant to do what she did. If a little boy does something wrong, he just being a boy, right? And you ask him, what were you thinking? I don't know, right? You weren't thinking. So interestingly enough. So it's cool that the Father, he didn't ask for an explanation of what he was thinking when he did this and when he squandered his wealth and when he brought shame on the family and when he did all of these stupid things to create gaps or a chasm between him and God. He didn't want an explanation and he didn't judge him and condemn him. Could you imagine kind of for me as a father, or even just as a human, when somebody does something stupid towards you or does something that offends you, you want to tell them all about it, right? And tell them 9 ways till Sunday, all the dumb things that they did and how you're going to rectify the situation. But God doesn't do that. He doesn't bring it up. He was just simply elated that his son was home. He was simply ecstatic that his son wasn't where he used to be, but he's with him now. God is so much less focused on where we've been, and he's so much less concerned with what we've done than he is with the fact that we're with him now. So let me kind of give you some insight. This may be helpful to some of you. Stop bringing up old stuff. Stop reminding yourselves of all of the ways that you failed before. Stop reminding yourselves of all the stupid things that you've done in your life. Just think about where you're at now. Think about God's love towards you now, the celebratory nature of the God that we serve now, right? So that's what we like to do. We like to, just like the Son, we like to think about all the things that we've done wrong. And can you imagine, like he's got a long time to think about it, right? He's on his way back. And he's probably preparing the speech that he's going to make to his father. He's like, all right, should I call him dad, right? Should I call him by his first name? Should I call him father, something more formal? And then he starts thinking about like all of the things that he could possibly say to get back into the good graces of his dad. And his dad could care less about his speech. His dad could care less about the approach. The father only cares that he's there with him. And it's so true of us. The way that we approach God with this mentality that we've got to come to him a certain way and we got to have everything prepared. It's just like he doesn't care about all that stuff. He just wants you and he just wants to be with you and he wants you to know that he celebrates you. He doesn't just tolerate you. He welcomes you back with open arms. He embraces you and he kisses you, right? Which is weird to think, to be honest with you, right? Some things that we say in Christianity, I'm like, that's a little strange, but I'm going to go with it because I know that it's good. So that's the first thing, is that God doesn't just tolerate you, he celebrates you. The second thing is this. We're going to talk about, let's call it a long-distance celebration. Another mentality that some people have toward God is that they're too far gone for God to love them. They're too far gone for God to be concerned with them. They're too far gone, or they've traveled too far in the wrong direction for God to care about them, to love them, to welcome them back. But that's just not the case. Luke chapter 15, verse 20, it says this, but he got up and he came to his father, and while he was still a long way off, His father saw him, felt compassion for him, ran and embraced him, and kissed him. There isn't a distance too great that God's grace can't cover, right? There's no gap too wide that it can't build a bridge to get across. There's no road long enough in the other direction that God's love can't get to it, can't travel it, right? And I think we just like to stack up all of our iniquity and we stack up all of our failures and we think there is just absolutely no way that God's grace can cover that. No, there's no way that God's grace is sufficient for that. And it is. There's no distance too far that he can't cover. So it's this long distance celebration. No matter how far you've gone, no matter how many things that you've done that you think are just, you know, too far beyond God's ability to love you, it's not true. You are never too far gone, even if you're still a long way off, just like it says in that verse. The last thing is this. And this is going to take just a little bit of explanation, so I pray that you'll bear with me on this. Where there is wasteful extravagance, there is an excessive celebration. Where there's wasteful extravagance, there is an excessive celebration. So let me kind of just give you the understanding or what I understand of this. The word prodigal, and I just learned this week. I've been in church 16, 17 years, long time, right? And I've heard this story hundreds of times, literally hundreds of times, but I've never heard anybody explain what the word prodigal means. Is anybody else in the same boat? The word prodigal, it means wasteful extravagance. So when we say, hey, this is the story of the prodigal son, what we're saying is this is the story of the wastefully extravagant son. It's the son who took everything that he had and he squandered it. He was wastefully extravagant in the way that he lived. It just doesn't have the same ring to it, right? The prodigal son or the wastefully extravagant son, just not the same. And so in physics, we learn that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So over here, you have the son, and don't go get all you, I see all the smart people with the wheels turning, like you're just reciting Newton's laws in your head. Just stop. That's not the place for it, right? So some of you could do that, but that's not what we're trying to get to. The point is just that, hey, the son was wastefully extravagant over here, and as the equal and opposite reaction, there's an excessive celebration over here. God will take the messes in our life, and he'll turn them into something meaningful. He'll take the mistakes that we make. I heard somebody say it like this. God will take your mistakes and turn it into a masterpiece, right? And it's so cool that you don't get to experience this until you're on the other side of it. When you're in the mess, you feel like you're in a mess because you're in a mess. But when you get through it and you get to the other side of it, you see how God was orchestrating things and he was working stuff out on your behalf. And the failure that you're experiencing now may just be the thing that you need to be successful later. Right? So God is always working, even if it feels like it's extreme and excessive wastefulness, it's preparing you for an extravagant, excessive celebration. Right? There's the equal and opposite reaction. There's going to be times that you mess things up. Epiphany, right? That's probably the most intelligent statement you've heard all day. Said no one ever. Like, we just mess things up. That's the one thing that we're guaranteed of as imperfect people is imperfection. We mess things up. And so when you mess something up in your relationships, when you mess something up in your pursuit of integrity, when you mess things up trying to live out this plan that you believe that God has given you to pursue and live out, when you mess things up, you got to remember, for every extravagantly wasteful thing and season, there's an excessive celebration on the other side. There's the opposite reaction. God can take our mistakes and use them for something greater in our lives and in the lives of other people. He can take what we squander and turn it into something significant. Have you ever experienced this? Has anybody else gone through a season where you're like, this sucks, this is awful, and I wouldn't want anybody else to go through this? And then you get to the other side of it and you see how God strengthened you and kind of encouraged you in that season and taught you some things in that season, and now he's given you an opportunity to use what you've learned to serve other people. He's taken this excessively extravagant, wasteful, I keep messing up the E's, right? This extravagantly wasteful season, and he's turned it into an excessive celebration. If we run to him, there's going to be a party. There will be a party. He will throw a ridiculously excessive celebration for us. He will take our wondering and turn it into something wonderful. Where there is extreme and excessive an extravagantly wasteful living, there is an excessive celebration. So what I want to do, I just want to wrap up today by looking at the last portion of those verses one more time, just to remind us of how much God feels like this toward us. Luke chapter 15, verses 22 through 24, it says this: "The father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand,'" which is, that's him accepting him back into the family. The ring was the father's kind of symbol of authority. And so he gave that authority back to his son. "So put the ring on his finger and put sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and he has come to life again. He was lost and has been found." And they began to celebrate. God, that's how he feels about you. He loves you. He doesn't just tolerate you. You're not just like, you know, this thought that he has and he kind of gets irked in the moment. He's like, oh, them again. He really loves you and he wants you to come to him. He wants you to run to him. And what's so beautiful about this, like, this doesn't mean it's not just for people who are so far off and have screwed things up so bad that this is their only hope. This is for all of us. All of the little areas of our life where we're trying to hide things from God or keep things from God or run from God in certain areas of our life, he wants us to run to him. And there's a party awaiting us. There's a celebration awaiting us. God wants to celebrate us. So what we need to do today, let's just pray and ask God to show us areas of our life where we need to give some stuff to him. And maybe you need to give your life to him. Maybe you've been running like the prodigal son and you've been trying to do your own thing and you need to stop doing that. It's empty and you're going to find yourself in a position just like the prodigal son did, and you're going to find yourself at the end of yourself and you need to run back to the Father. But maybe it's more subtle than that. Maybe you've got some issues in your life that you've been trying to do and go about on your own and you've been trying to take control yourself. Run to the Father. Give it back to the Father. And there will be a celebration. Where there is extravagantly wasteful living, there is an excessive celebration. Let me pray for us. Father, thank you so much for all that you do for us. God, that you don't just tolerate us. Sometimes, even though that's all we could hope for or deserve. But Jesus, that you love us, that you lavish your love on us, that you celebrate us. It says that in Romans chapter 5, that while we were still sinners, God, while we had nothing to offer to you, that you willingly gave your life for us. What a celebration. What a privilege, Jesus, that you would feel and respond to us in that way. God, help us to take any areas of our life, or maybe it's our life in full, that we need to give to you, that we need to run back to you, that we need to stop trying to do things our own way. God, help us to run to you and to see your love, to see your grace, to see your mercy, to see the celebration that will ensue. Jesus, we love you so much. We ask that you would help us just to remember, God, that you're not just a God of rules and you're not just a God of enforcing these moralities upon us. God, you're not just a God who's this cosmic a rule enforcer or somebody who's just trying to control and manipulate our lives and take all of the fun out. But you're a God who loves us, who cares about us, and wants us to live a real and meaningful and joyful life here and now. Help us to remember, God, to celebrate. It's in Jesus' name we pray. And everybody say, amen.